Good morning. Today is Thursday, June the 1st. June the 2nd. 1 plus 1 is 2. Yeah. Yeah, okay. I'll work my way up. 158th day, for real, of the year. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
You guys had a couple more drug busts yesterday, huh?
So I hear. Yeah.
Anything new?
Well, I could probably run an old press conference or press release through you and be similar.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Wouldn't that be quite fun?
Yeah.
Let's see if we can find our quote this morning. Oh, jeez. This was a bar refrain in 1810. I guess it was common then. Therefore, drink.
Oh.
That's, yeah.
Short but sweet.
Yeah. Kind of direct in his presentation style also.
Kind of like your show.
Yeah. Sweet or short? You take your pick, man.
Yeah.
Because we can work on both. Oh, not literally on the length part of the program. So here we are on the cusp of summertime.
Yes.
New fiscal year, new challenges. Seems like we've got new folks wandering our community again. What's it look like? What are you anticipating for the next 3 or 4 months?
Well, I think it's going to be busy as usual for the sheriff's office as far as, you know, enforcement issues that we've historically had to deal with. We're also trying to get out ahead of the summer issues and making sure people play smart. The rivers again are higher this year than they have been in the past. We have a lot more snow melt than we've had in the past, which is a good thing, but we have to be cognizant of the issues with the rivers and people overextending themselves there. We live in an area that's great for recreating, and it can impact the community and impact my office with search and rescue issues and things like that. So, you know, we're gearing up and trying to be ready for that kind of thing.
A lot of folks don't think about the search and rescue component, but if there's, let's say you guys get contacted 10 minutes from now, what happens? What's the process that is triggered?
Yeah, what happens is we immediately have to get the troops ready, and we send people out to do a hasty search or to see just what the conditions are on the ground. If we have to call in more resources, and we do that, we have a very good, excellent sheriff's posse that volunteers that are specialized in that type of thing, and we utilize them quite a bit. And they're a great asset to the community and the sheriff's office.
Do you spend a lot of staff hours on a search and rescue?
Yes. It's very labor intensive. If we engage in a search and rescue type of thing, we have to have managers out there, people that are on the ground the whole time. You know, we don't necessarily leave an area. We'll keep it manned until that search or rescue is concluded.
How do you know where to go, where to look, or do you, is it best case guess and you throw the other areas out, and then if it doesn't result in a quick find, then you kind of start expanding the area?
Well, a lot of it's based on experience and training. You know, we'll have a point of reference of origin of where this person or people may or may not be, and then we use the experience and training that we've amassed over many years and utilize that to do our best practice, best approach to that incident.
KINS News and Information Time is 8:19. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
You've never heard us before because we're something brand new. It's called Destination Radio. If you live in Ferndale or Gold Beach, Blue Lake or Klamath, Brookings or Eureka, you'll be looking for someplace different to take the family, something special to do next weekend. The best destinations for day trips and overnights, for hiking or biking, for beachcombing or birdwatching, and you'll turn to us for ideas because you're the reason we're here, to help you find your close-to-home destination. Stay, play, and relax with us. Destination Radio.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, before the break, we were talking about search and rescue and that there's protocols and processes that are followed. If it's something that's a little bit broader in scale, when does the CHP, when does the Coast Guard? When do some of those types of folks that can scan large areas at a time come in and supplement the ground troops that, that you have out there?
Well, you know, we always consider all the resources available. And if it's an air operation where you know, eyes above would be helpful, we'll reach out to the Coast Guard and the higher patrol to bring those assets into the area. And many times they're able to, you know, provide a few hours here and there for searching issues, you know, during best flight times. So we're always watching for those types of opportunities to bring those folks in, and they're more than willing to assist. You know, that's a major mission of the Coast Guard anyway, is the search and rescue type of things. We obviously, they're more of a coastal type of an asset, which we utilize, but they'll fly missions inland. If
those big guys go pretty far.
Yeah. And of course, Highway Patrol, they're always willing, if their helicopter in Redding is available, or if they have a fixed wing available, they'll come over and assist us too. They're always willing to help. Now, if it gets into something really broader than this, you know, we have the regional OES. We're within a certain OES region, Office of Emergency Services region. We can reach out to Alameda, which is the lead county for our area, and request other assets.
Like an Amber kind of a thing, a kidnapping?
Well, no, I'm talking about
just lost.
Just lost search and rescue.
Really, they'll bring up from that far away.
Yeah, we can request assets within our region, and once those asset requests are exhausted, then we can reach out to other regions within the state. For assets to come in and help us, and it's, we have utilized that a number of times when our searchers are just exhausted, and it's unwise and probably unrealistic to put them back in the field. We'll request those assets, and
so kind of like a backfill, kind of like the fire guys do when they're fighting a fire,
right? And they're more than willing to assist and to get us assets as needed, and in the same regard, we've provided assets through in other areas when asked.
Is there still a Civil Air Patrol?
Yeah. I don't know how vibrant they are, but there is a Civil Air Patrol, and we have requested assets through them as well.
Yeah, I know historically, I can remember hearing, and there were 8 or 10 guys or whatever, they go bombing around looking and helping.
And we used to have a reserve program within the Sheriff's Office for air assets, where we had certain pilots in the area that would become disaster service workers or reserve deputy sheriffs that would come in and utilize their aircraft, and we just pay for the fuel for them to assist. But that's that program somewhat subsided due to lack of interest or those able to participate in it.
You mean lack an aging Air Force?
Probably.
What do you look for? I mean, how do you know that you're on the right trail for somebody? If they truly lost, how do you know, or hurt?
Well, you know, that's a great question. You know, we have incidences that have historically that happened where people aren't found for long periods of time. You know, probably one of the most confounding things is to find where a vehicle's gone off the road and there's no indication that vehicle's off the road, and it's found months later, or someone is able to eventually crawl up to the roadway.
Like the Russian guy.
Yeah.
Back and forth. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what he went through. It sounded to me like Sisyphus. Get right up close to the edge and can't quite make it. You go tumbling back down.
And if you remember a few years back up in Oregon, there was a family that was out, and they took a pass through the snow and got stuck, and they were lost for a long period of time. Obviously, it was
they were following GPS.
Yeah.
And they got their Winnebago up on dirt road.
Right.
That wasn't designed for it.
Yeah. So those types of things happen. So what we look for is, again, we got to go to the point of origin, and we have to start there and begin to fan out from there and look for the clues and signs that are available. Again, you know, a search and rescue is not a scientific thing in the sense of there's a set protocol. There is a protocol, but a procedure that always works, because there's always that unknown. And so it is a needle in a haystack type of thing at times.
Leave a lot of marks along the way if you do get lost. Don't move.
Right.
But
yeah.
You leave a lot of mark, broken twigs, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so you know, it's a good idea for people when they're out backpacking or in the wilderness and they go off trail you know, to have some tape with you, some of that colored tape, and put it up so there's some kind of sign that you went this way. And even to backtrack, I was just reading something the other day where a person got off the trail for a potty break or something like that, and they couldn't find the trail and they were lost for a long period of time. So just being aware of your surroundings and a good sense of direction and being able to get back on point.
Yeah, I would think if you took a couple steps and then you just hit that loose rock.
Yeah.
You know, you can slide a pretty good distance.
That's
in
right.
some situations and not come back up. Are you talking about like the green gardener tape?
Well, that would work. Yeah, yes, or better to have another color that doesn't blend in, but something to show. You know, the other thing.
The duct tape or like the orange that they use for some of the contractors in the
right.
county.
Yeah, something like that. Okay. And the other thing, too, is when people they get out into the woods, a lot of times they'll secrete themselves in the underbrush without, you know, maybe because it's hot or they're trying to keep warm or who knows what it is. But, you know, you get out in the open as best you can or put some kind of sign out in the open so people know that someone's there.
It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Talk Shop presented by Redek and by CDH Painting. Mike, this time of the year, it seems to me like there's lots of challenges that are out there, whether they're the ones that are anticipated or the ones that kind of surprise, surprise, surprise. How do you keep everybody nimble enough to be able to deal with the anticipated, the unanticipated? You got a couple more bodies now, but to me, what that says, you're going to find multiple more things.
To do?
Also, yeah, you haven't hit the tipping point yet of saturation.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, that's a good point. And what we have to do is just continually train and be prepared for those, especially the unexpected. I know we deal well with the things that historically occur in the county. I mean, as best we can based on manpower, but the biggest thing is to be prepared for that unexpected. And in this line of work, we get a lot of that. And so it's being able to put the chess pieces together and making sure we have the right number of personnel to be able to deal with things. You know, we can exhaust our personnel pretty quickly in a critical incident. And then we have to start looking out from our department, looking to others to assist. So we have to be careful that we don't overextend our folks and be smart about the way we put our folks into the field, making sure that we don't oversaturate an incident because all hands on deck and making sure that we put just the adequate number to do the job, because we may be in a cycle where we have a 24 or 48 hour period of time we're involved in something. You can burn folks out pretty quick, so being prepared for that type of thing.
Well, if you got everybody looking one direction, something happens in another direction.
Right.
You can't get kind of by surprise.
And that's never happened before.
Okay, we'll just kind of let that one slide. It's got to be kind of intriguing managing the manpower and your staff, regardless of what size it is. If you got more, great. Right. If you have less, great. I mean, that part doesn't matter. Playing the game, the trends. Does it take as long to do the same thing today as it did 15 years, 20 years ago?
It can. And, you know, you bring up a good point. With more people, it gives us more exposure. More exposure to things that occur or things that we self-generate, which, you know, we try to be as proactive as we can and getting away from that reactive posture we've been in for years. So, we have to really be cognizant of those things and being able to, use our personnel smarter. instead of in the past everyone all hands on deck, everyone runs to the fire, so to speak.
If it's not an earthquake or a tidal wave or a flood or something like along those lines that really is outside of control, will you be able to watch the trends, even if it's like daily trends or daily activities, and start to see shifts of patterns and be able to do something about it? Or is it just kind of an awareness, or is that such an anomaly because of the time compression?
Well, everything you just said enters into it, you know, and so it is again, you know, we have been so reactive in our business in the past. To be more proactive, we tend to now sit back not do anything, that's what I mean, but sit back and look at those trends, see if we can analyze that and see, you know, where our hot spots may or may not be. You know, we live in an unpredictable world, especially in law enforcement, as to that type of thing. That's why we try to put together teams of people to be very proactive. Our problem-oriented policing teams, our teams that go out and deal with issues that some community or some area may be having, and try to stop that activity, or at least put it to in a position where it's more manageable. So there is some of that going on, you know, looking at those trends, looking at those problem areas, and trying to saturate those areas so that we can cut down on crime.
If it's not geographic, but if it's activity,
right,
trend based, does that make it easier or more difficult to try to react to and possibly divert?
Well, I think what it does is it gives us an idea of where we need to train personnel more effectively, give them additional training if we identify an area that seems or an activity that seems to be emerging as a new activity, or an activity that is becoming bigger in scope. Then we provide that training to our personnel so that they're able to deal with it effectively, and our response is more pointed to those issues.
I suppose it's always going to be drug-driven. But if you could, let's say in Mike's perfect world, poof, drugs are gone.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. This is... You thought Billy went through something in the East Coast. This is a whole different ballgame. Drugs are now gone. What's left? If there's not
perfect world? No, I didn't mean
yeah,
that.
Yeah. No. Oh, really? I mean, you think it's that interwoven in everything, that if the drugs are or yeah, alcohol are going to be there?
Our crime trends that we're seeing are many of them are drug related, either to continue to be able to continue with their activities in the drug world. You know, many of our burglaries and that type of thing. If we just had a case the other day where there had been a burglary of a sizable amount of property, and we were able to backtrack to these folks on probation and we recovered quite a bit of property. Well, there was also a lot of drug paraphernalia, and they were both involved in the drug, not so much trade, but use of, and possibly in the trade of drugs. So many of the crimes that we're seeing are related to some type of drug consumption or production of some kind. Can I say every one of them? No, but I would say our highest percentage are. And so that's why I say, when you said let's take the drugs out of the picture completely, that what I see is a more productive society with jobs and the ability to sustain themselves through productivity. Where right now the productivity that we're seeing is more of in a negative manner, you know, to bolster up a habit that they're already involved in that's negative in itself.
KINS News and Information Time is 8:43. We'll be back with more from Mike Downey.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka. Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. Final couple minutes this morning with Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey. Mike, with some of the activity that Eureka has been doing, addressing homelessness or changing it or stirring it up or whatever you want to say, are you seeing impacts outside the in the unincorporated areas? I mean, there's you have references, certainly in southern Humboldt.
Right.
Are you seeing it in the Myrtletown, Pine Hill, Humboldt Hill areas adjacent to Eureka?
Well, you know, as soon as all that occurred, you know, we obviously became very sensitive to what's happening in the county itself. There have been, you know, minor incursions, let's say, that we've dealt with. But I still believe there's probably some areas there that out there that we don't know about yet that will probably become more and more visible as time goes on, based upon what we saw behind the mall. I mean, as the area became bigger and more intensified, it became more, it spilled out more into the you know adjoining areas. So I think there's probably some areas we have not located yet where those types of things are happening. So you know, private property owners need to be aware of what's going on their property, and if they need assistance in dealing with issues, we'll gladly assist them.
Any fear that it'll be like the South Spit was, where a foothold and then it just starts to formalize?
That's always a concern. The difference between that and the South Spit is the South Spit was much more visible. It was an area that people would go. I mean, historically, people would go there to recreate in the summertime. They would come over from the inland areas to fish and to stay for a few weeks or so there on the coast to be in cooler weather. So it's a much more visible area. So as that area grew and built up, we were much more cognizant of it. And it got to a point similar with behind the mall that we needed to take enforcement action.
Was Lolita impacted by it directly? Was it a spill out? And then when it disappeared, did Lolita get cleaned up a little bit?
Yeah, you know, the biggest concern with Lolita was the services it was drawing from Lolita and EMS, that type of thing.
Thanks for coming by.
All right, thank you.
Hey, here's summer.
All right.
See y'all tomorrow.